They're very famous.
Mm-hmm. And this was like the photo of them.
Right.
Because you search for either one, it's the same photo. But
right.
Still, you know. Yeah.
I actually have a picture of both of them if you ever want to see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But I'm not sure which is which, actually.
I visited the Judy Chicago visit, which is like what started this. And
mm-hmm.
You know, back in the summer, I think. Yeah. And then Judy Chicago's over at the dinner party.
Okay.
Which just got me interested in women and women in history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Done during the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
Sort of a groundbreaking piece of feminist artwork. And
uh-huh.
Amy Winder in the art education department teaches about it.
Oh, okay.
But the piece has three sides. Each side is another era of history.
Okay, it's like a big triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And you have, like, signed names on the bottom, too, and if you can see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they're all women who have a place at the table now.
Right.
That previously were left out of the story.
Right. That's neat.
So it's the idea.
Yeah.
And she actually did it as a collaborative piece with a lot of other women artists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Do you have any idea how long it takes her to do this?
Several years,
I think. I would think, yeah. Just by the size and everything, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
The MoMA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the Brooklyn Museum of Art, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will leave you guys to it, and
okay.
I will be back.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we can move. I don't know if it's better at the main desk or here, whatever works best for you is fine with me.
Yeah. So, let me just set things up here. Yeah, sorry about the technical issues. And
yeah, those things happen. Are you familiar with this book?
No, I'm not actually.
I haven't read much of it. This is a book I might use sometime in my Civil War class. And Carol Burkin has written a lot of textbooks for classes about women. She has one about women in the colonial era and women in the revolutionary era.
Mm-hmm.
So here's three or four women from the Civil War era.
Oh, interesting.
Jefferson Davis's
mm-hmm.
wife, Ulysses S. Grant's wife, and then one of the Grimkes.
Yeah, Alright, let's get started. Yeah, so, thank you for agreeing to meet with me.
Sure.
Yeah,
nice
that's great. So I have this blog, it's on women in history, and
mm-hmm.
women who have forgotten history.
Mm-hmm.
So, my first question would be, you know, can you tell me about the role that women played in the history of the Civil War? Were there ways in which women participated in the Civil War that affected the course of history that were not, or like, have not been recognized? And then, like, what specific examples can you give me? You know,
okay.
Just as, like,
women participate like crazy in both the North and the South in many, many different ways. And I think, actually, most of them have largely been recognized, but maybe not the full degree of them. So, to start with, both, once again, in the South and in the North, women take on new economic roles. So they work in factories, and Northern women had done that before, but now they're making, like, weapons, which was seen as not necessarily a feminine industry. Well, now it is.
Mm-hmm.
Both Northern and Southern women, one of the things that's kind of interesting, they become clerks. And today with, you know, word processing and cutting and pasting and things that they don't think of, but almost all records are handwritten. So governments, business, everybody employed thousands of clerks who wrote stuff. And many women start to become clerks, and part of it was because they were perceived as having good handwriting. But it's interesting, that means these women had to be literate. Women become nurses. Nursing was largely a male profession till the Civil War, at least in the United States. So that's a very big one. And then some women are spies, some women are in combat. The other one, and this would more be in the North than in the South, women were very active in what were called aid societies. Like the North had something called the United States Sanitary Commission. And the United States Sanitary Commission raised money, and they used the money to purchase goods needed by the troops, usually for hospitals. So many northern cities like Philadelphia and Buffalo and Pittsburgh and New York City would have these massive fairs where they would raise money and donate it to the United States Sanitary Commission. And women were pretty active in organizing and participating in these fairs. They usually weren't the planners, but they did a lot of the middle and lower level things. And some historians have argued that opens the door for women to do more things post-Civil War. Mm-hmm. So women do many contributions. The final one, and this is actually a big deal, and this maybe doesn't actually get appreciated, but women in both the North and the South keep farms going and family businesses going and their families going when their husband, father, brothers are gone. That's a huge deal that nobody completely appreciates.
Yeah, with like the home front in World War One.
Yeah, in World War II also, yeah. Women do also make all sorts of decisions and keep family life functioning that, once again, it's not real dramatic, but it's wildly important. Mm-hmm. And you can actually make a case, the Southern home front partially collapses because these women, in some cases, can't do everything. There's just so many other issues they have to deal with. And probably by 1863, certainly by 1864, in the South, you see Southern women writing letters to their husbands, fathers, brothers, telling them to desert and come home because the conditions at home are, you know, are intolerable. And you begin to see desertion rates in the Confederate Army rise late in the war, partly because of that. Because these soldiers are getting letters from their children and their spouses saying, like, we're starving. Well, maybe my highest commitment's to my family, not to the army. And we need you here, things like that.
Wait, so like, other than like the women starving because, you know, there was like not enough food to go around in the South, what were like other things like that caused women to, from the South, to send letters to their husband, you know, desert, come home?
Part of it is the food. Part of it is, and this would more be on maybe larger, but slavery begins to break down. Women can't get slaves to work, or the slaves run away, and then they can't run the farm or the plantation. Part of it is, in some cases, they don't feel safe anymore, because as the Union Army advances and Confederate armies retreat, if you're in a Union-occupied area, you're probably okay, and if you're in a Confederate-occupied area, you're okay. What begins to happen is there's sort of like a no man's land where nobody's in control, and that's where you'd see lots of banditry and robbery and pillaging by people on both sides. Women felt very, and men too for that matter, felt very unsafe in these areas. So between the economy collapsing and shortages and not being able to provide the basic livelihoods, Southern women in some cases begin to say, you, meaning husband, father, brothers, your greatest obligation is to your family, not to the country, and you need to come home. And that's a society that's collapsing. And I think you can even find cases where some Confederate generals and government officials begin to talk about maybe you need to censor the mail because we can't let these letters keep going through to the soldiers. They don't do it because you can't practically, but they realize this is a huge problem.
Yeah, so it became like such a big issue, and like obvious, like, so you think it like kind of contributed to the downfall of the Confederates?
Oh yeah. I mean, they probably at some point are going to lose anyways, but that speeds things up. I'm not sure. I don't read a lot of fiction, but there's a book called Cold Mountain, and it was a movie maybe 8 or 10 years ago with Nicole Kidman, and I think Cold Mountain is about a woman and her family and the male member of the family deserting and trying to come back. I think that's the story of Cold Mountain. It's like a historic fiction. Mm. So, women do a lot for both the North and the South, and they really have an impact, but it's not a high profile impact, but it's a very important foundational one.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, with that maybe women in the South sending the letters, that they could have been on the North side? Like,
Yeah, see, that's an interesting question. And once again, there's so many women, there's many answers. But some historians have argued that many Southern women secretly don't like slavery because they see slavery as messing up traditional family life. So maybe at some levels, these women, it's not so much they're pro-Northern, but they're anti-war. They just want this thing over with. And if my husband and all his brothers go home to their families, that might end this thing quicker.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that's something that doesn't get looked at a lot, but it's a real important idea. Kind of another one. And once again, a lot of these are the Southerners because the Southerners get hit a lot harder. But there are cases, and once again, there's many, many examples on all sides. But some Southern women, as the war begins to collapse, if they're wealthy, begin to spend their money very extravagantly, and they have big parties, and they buy food that's available. And you begin to see a class issue because poorer Southern women who can't afford it, say, why are you women blowing this money on these wild parties when your neighbors are starving or the troops in the field are starving? And there seems to be sort of a resentment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. So, the second question I have is, like, so I've read that, like, women pay the big role in espionage during the Civil War, with, you know, the I think, isn't Elizabeth Lou and Mary Bowser, like, they both did espionage?
Right, for the North in Richmond.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you tell me about any of these women and the organizations or groups they were part of? Like, if they were, like, loose associations or...
Yeah, you know, and a lot of this is very hard to know because since it is espionage, a lot of things aren't written down. So part of the problem is people who are spying don't want to leave a lot of records. And after the war, a lot of these women say what they did, but you can't necessarily document. That's not to say they're lying, but there's not a lot of evidence to support it. But in the case of Lou and some other women, frequently they would have contacts with the Union Army, and they would have a contact with one or two Union intelligence officers. So, for example, my understanding is what Lou would do is she's in Richmond, and potentially Mary Bowser is actually, who's a slave, who's actually in the Jefferson Davis household. Mm-hmm. Did you know that or no?
Yeah. Did she, like, try to burn it down, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jefferson Davis's wife, I think, denies that she's actually there, but some people say she would deny it because she wouldn't want to necessarily admit a Union slave was in her household. But what they would try to do is any information they could find, it doesn't necessarily have to be about soldiers, it doesn't have to be about, you know, ships, but any information you can pass on to the Union Army might give you insights into what the Confederate government is thinking or what they're planning. So for most spies, men and women, it's very hard to say, because I found out X, we won the battle or we lost the battle, but they provide lots of information that helps you plan how your enemy is going to react. So there's a Union intelligence officer named Sharp. I don't know what Sharp's first name is, but it's S-H-A-R-P-E. I actually think there's a new book about Sharp. Sharp has contact with some of these female spies, and they're feeding the information to Sharp, and then Sharp puts it together with other intelligence and tries to make, you know, planning and advise the Union military what to do based on all these other operations. I think in general, a lot of these women spies had male contacts who they passed the information to. And I suspect that's because spies themselves don't want to directly communicate with the government, but also there was the belief that maybe you needed somebody to help these women do what they do or to pass the information on. These males were frequently called handlers, so they were like the intermediaries. And that was true for both the North and the South. So the women would find stuff out, they would pass it to someone, and then somebody up the line would pass it to a third person. The other thing is that's interesting to me about women and spies is, in some cases, and this is certainly true with the Union Army, don't know if it's true with the Confederates, in some cases the Union knows some of these women are spies, but they don't think they're dangerous, so they don't take them seriously. Like, are you familiar with Belle Boyd? Does that name mean anything to you?
Okay.
Belle Boyd is pretty young. She's like 17 or 18 when the Civil War starts, and she's in Western Virginia, in what ultimately becomes West Virginia. And she actually kills a Union soldier, and she's sort of acquitted because she basically argues this guy was attacking her and her mother. But she becomes a Confederate spy, and she's fairly well known in Washington, and I think Belle Boyd is arrested two or three different times. And they always ultimately let her go because she says, well, you know, I'm just a woman, I'm a 20-year-old, what can I do? But she's actually passing a fair amount of information on what the Union Army is doing in the Shenandoah Valley. And she survives the war, and I think she lives till about 1900, and I think she partly supports herself by telling about her exploits in the North. After the Civil War, she's married, and she goes to England once or twice. She's known as like something, like there's all these wild names, but she becomes sort of like a cult hero. She's called something like the Amazon of Secession or something, and like they give her nicknames, but she's a pretty effective spy, but the North doesn't think she is.
Wait, so she was on the Confederate side?
Yeah, she's a Confederate.
I don't think I have anyone who was really on the Confederate side.
The Confederate side? Belle Boyd is a very famous one, and she lives pretty long after the Civil War. I'm sure you could find a lot of information about Belle Boyd. Mm-hmm. Another Confederate one is a woman named Rose O'Neill Greenhow. It's Greenhow.
Can you say that again?
Rose O'Neill Greenhow, Greenhow.
Okay.
Might be Greenhow. And she's another Confederate spy.
Mm-hmm.
and she's passing information about movements of the Union Army, once again, in the General Richmond area. She's arrested, is set free, and in her case, it's kind of a tragic. In about 1864, she's on a ship off the coast of Wilmington, North Carolina, and the ship sinks and she's drowned. So she doesn't survive the war, but if she does, it would have been interesting what actually she's doing. They know of her, they know she's doing certain things, but she drowns in 1864, so not a whole lot's known about her. And I think if you dug into those two, you could come up with a couple other names. Mm-hmm. But once again, a lot of them, there's not a whole lot known because a lot of it's not really documented.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, like, at the time, were, like, these women recognized for their contribution? Like, and if so, how? And then if not, then, like, were they eventually recognized?
I think it depends on individual cases. Some yes and some no. Belle Boyd, I think, actually is. I think people, like I said, she becomes a little bit of almost like a cult hero. Maybe that's not quite the right idea, but people did know about her. And after the Civil War, I think she somewhat supports herself by talking about her exploits. Elizabeth Van Loo, I don't actually know a whole lot about if people at the time or after the war are aware of her. I think they are. And Mary Bowser, I don't know enough about her. I know what she's doing, but I don't honestly know if women at the time, if people at the time recognize it. Her, I suspect no, because she is African-American and she is in the South. But I think Elizabeth Liu, you might know more about her than I do. I think she's from a fairly prominent family.
Yeah.
And I think she's kind of, seems to me, maybe I've read, she comes from a wealthy family and she uses a lot of her money to actually free slaves.
Because what I wrote about her is that, you know, so she was, like, connected with a lot of, with the Grimke sisters and with Mary Bowler.
Okay. And I think maybe she's educated in Philadelphia, maybe?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
She might be. I'm not sure.
But she did really, because I know that when Angelina Grimke went in front of, I think, the legislator, she was there and she, like, was supporting her. And I think that she spoke there, too. Pretty certain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, an abolitionist, and she was in, she was another Union spy.
Right, so right. Yeah. Yeah, she's in the Richmond area, or maybe in Richmond itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and when her dad died, she, like, released all her slaves.
Right.
She got her mother and her to release all the slaves.
Right, and I think I've read, now I've read some of the things people think they know about her might not be accurate, but I read somewhere maybe she used some of the last money the family had to possibly buy slaves, and then she freed them all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Her, which her is pretty remarkable, that. If you think about that.
Yeah, like, her and her brother, they would spend tons of money to sell whole, to, like, buy whole families.
Right, and then, grant them their freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is very noble. That's quite a thing to do.
Also, pretty soon, like, she wanted to be a lawyer, and her dad was like, you know, if you weren't a woman, being a lawyer, but
right.
She couldn't obviously go into that, but she was
right.
Really interested in it.
Right.
In the law.
Yeah, and especially being a Southern woman, no less, because it's even more restrictive. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just move on to question number three. So I read some, like, resources, or some sources, black women and white women who dressed as men and fought as soldiers,
mm-hmm.
but were also spies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about like other roles that women of color were involved in during the Civil War?
Okay. Once again, it would depend where they are and when they are, but some Southern women, or some African American women, not necessarily Southern women, some African American women are basically what were called camp followers. And camp followers were women who were with the army, and they did things like laundry and nursing. And once again, that's not real like glamorous or high profile, but it's a really important skill.
So I'm kind of confused. Like, when they did that, they weren't, like, being paid?
Camp followers were usually given, like, basic provisions. And sometimes the soldiers would pay them to do the laundry. But it's not like they were on a salary or recognized soldiers or anything like that.
Okay, so it was kind of like being a slave, but for the army. So for
yeah, although they're voluntarily following the army. It's not like anybody made them do it. They chose to do this. Mm-hmm. And that would be true mainly with the Northern Army, probably not so much with the Southern Army. I don't honestly know what the South. And that would be when they're in the South. The other one is, and the most famous example of this would be Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
But then you know who she is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tubman is a fairly effective spy, and in about 62, 63, 64, I'm a little fuzzy on the year, she's helping Union troops in South Carolina. And what people don't remember, but the Union Navy takes lots of islands off the coast of South Carolina and Georgia, and in what they would do is they would raid the Confederate interior, and one of the things they're trying to do is liberate slaves, because if enough slaves would run away, you would cripple the Southern economy. And Harriet Tubman, being African American, was very effective in helping leading Union troops to where there would be slaves who would want to run away.
Yeah, and like, I think in one famous case, they got like a huge boat, and then Harriet Tubman, like, delivered a speech and got the slaves all riled up to, you know, leave, and, like, got them to trust everyone else in the Union.
Right.
And then they all went on, it was full of people.
Yeah. Maybe I've heard, maybe as many as 700. It's a huge number.
Yeah.
And the other thing, at least in this particular case, is some of these slaves would then be willing to either join the Union Army in black regiments, or they would provide very valuable information and or labor. One of the things, and once again, this isn't, you know, real high profile important, but it's in some of these coastal areas, and this wouldn't just be for women, it would also be for men, but the Union Army would set slaves up, runaway slaves, and give them land that they could farm. And these slaves then, or ex-slaves, would be able to grow crops that would help the Union Army, or in some cases they were growing cotton that would be sent to the North, because there's a whole economic side to the Civil War nobody thinks about. The North still needed cotton, while the South isn't producing it for the North, so the North would try to seize cotton. Well, if slaves or ex-slaves are growing cotton on abandoned land, that's a help for the Union economy.
Yeah.
And once again, that's not like real high profile or famous or important, but it's actually something that is very helpful. And I actually also think, and maybe this sort of a little bit goes back to your first question, I suspect, although I don't think you could actually document it, that slave women provide tremendous assistance to Union armies when they're in the South on, like, intelligence, how to get from point A to point B. I know they help capture Union prisoners who escape, Southern slaves help a lot. And once again, these are hundreds of little cases that individually they don't mean anything, but to that person it does, and to that slave that does, because that's the way they're resisting. And collectively they probably help, you know, thousands of wounded Union soldiers and escaping Union soldiers make it back to the Army, survive the war, that once again is contributing to the Union victory, that individually it doesn't mean anything, but collectively it's a lot.
Yeah, so just with the farming, with the runaway slaves or escapees, was it kind of a farming, like, you know, we'll give you some of our food and we'll keep like a little bit for ourselves kind
of? Yeah, and this is like a real complicated story, but there in South Carolina there were called the Sea Islands, and the Sea Islands are like off Charleston. There's these little coastal islands, and those had been cultivated by Southerners. But when the Union Army arrived off the coast, Southerners fled. So what the North would do is they would set up fugitive slaves who had escaped their lines, and they would let them plant. So these slaves are feeding themselves, but they're growing surpluses that would then be purchased by the Army or sent north. And when the Civil War is over, there's a period called Reconstruction. And the experience of some of these slaves on these sea islands very much helps influence what some of the policies that the Union should follow. Like, should you give slaves land, and how much and where? Those are all issues that these fugitive slaves who are farming are creating.
And then also my other question is, can you talk about the relationship between African American women and white women who worked together and then like formed alliances sort of during the Civil War to end slavery? And what was the complex nature of the relationship between white abolitionist women and African American women fighting for their freedom?
Okay, that's probably the hardest question you've asked. And that one, I think, is one of the harder ones to document. But there certainly are examples. And once again, Elizabeth Van Loo is a good example of this. She definitely is working with Mary Bowser. And I was saying this to your mom, I don't know if you heard me. There's some question whether Mary Bowser is actually her name. There's some people who say that's an alias. And her name might actually be Mary Jane Richards. And Bowser is like a fake name. Okay, like an alias almost. The other thing is, the Grimkes are a good example. Are you familiar with Lucretia Mott? Do you know who Lucretia Mott is?
No.
Lucretia Mott is a Quaker woman from Pennsylvania. And she's involved in many reform movements before the Civil War. She's involved in an anti-war movement and women's rights movement. She's also an abolitionist. And in all these cases, and I'm not a great expert on this, this is a little beyond me, but in all these cases, these white women and African American women have a common goal, and that goal is they believe A, slavery is wrong, but B, women don't have equivalent rights as males, and they should. Or if not quite the same, at least they should be close. There's a whole question on that. And there is a racial component, though, because black women and white women aren't perceived as quite the same. They're always under some male authority, but white women were seen as a little bit higher than black women. But the women themselves don't necessarily believe that and don't act that way. So it's a very complex, evolving situation, and some of that is individual personalities, and some of that is where these women are and who they are.
I just noticed the relationship between Elizabeth Van Loo and Mary Bowser or
right.
Richards. Like, it's very strong, but also obviously might have had complications because, you know, like, there's just a lot of complexity to it.
Yeah, they're from very different worlds. Yeah. There's a racial component. There's also a class component. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's exactly right. And those two are the most famous I know of. I'm sure there are others, but I don't really know that much about them. But they are from very different worlds and they're different stages of life, and their backgrounds are just so different. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, my last question is, like, I posted on my blog about the Grimke sisters, Anna Ella Carroll, and, like, other women who were politically active during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to be as much as they could.
Right.
Do you know of any other women who were active in this way leading up to or during the Civil War?
Yes and no. And some of this, you know, it might not be quite what you're looking for, but there's a lot of women who actually have a pretty big impact on the Civil War and to some degree expanding the role of women. Like, do you know who Clara Barton is?
No.
Okay, Clara Barton is... After the Civil War, she's the founder of the American Red Cross. So during the Civil War, Clara Barton raises money and buys medical supplies, and her nickname is the Angel of the Battlefield. She literally, in some cases, is on the battlefield helping wounded soldiers. And she's a Northerner. There's a very famous story, and I think it's probably true, at least it's reprinted everywhere. There's a very big Civil War battle in Maryland called Antietam, and Clara Barton is at Antietam, and the story is she's actually so close to the battlefield, she's with a soldier, she's nursing a wounded soldier, and a bullet goes through her dress and kills the man she's helping. So she's not, you know, 5 miles away at a hospital, she's literally 20 feet behind the firing line. Another Northern woman who's pretty important is Dorothea Dix. I don't know if you know of her.
Mm-hmm.
And Dix is D-I-X. And she's an interesting figure. Dorothea Dix actually has a government position. She's the head of nurses for the United States military. And she was called behind her back, and maybe to her face, General Dix. And supposedly people were afraid of her. She was very stern, very dictatorial, wouldn't take anything from anybody, but tremendously good at keeping the nursing facilities going. And there's a funny story about her when the Civil War breaks out and nobody realizes how big it was. And she was a reformer. She was involved in reform movements before the Civil War. I think she was involved in prison reform and maybe reform of people who had like mental handicaps and insane asylum reforms. They used to do horrible things with people in insane asylums. When the Civil War broke out, there was some concern women would join nurses because they were trying to find husbands. And she had rules, and I don't remember them offhand, but they were sort of funny. It said, like, no woman who was attractive or under a certain age could be a nurse. And she actually, in some cases, turned down nuns. By about 1862, there's such a demand, she's dropped all those and realizes most women who want to volunteer to be a nurse are serious. Like, they're not doing this because it's an adventure, and they're not doing this because they're looking for a husband. They're doing this because they think they're helping their country and their fellow human being. So Dorothea Dix and Clara Barton are two good examples of Northern women who really expand the role of women after the war and help make nursing an acceptable profession for women. Lucretia Mott would be another person who, kind of like the Grimkes, is an abolitionist, and she's also involved in women's rights. She's also involved in the peace movement because she's a Quaker. She's somebody who I don't think is quite at the same level as somebody like the Grimke sisters, but in her own right is pretty important.
I'd also just finish up. If there's anything else,
The only other one, and you had asked me this about women who serve in the military as males, and there is a book on this, and KU has it. I think they have it both as a book, and I think they also have an online version, so you could access it from home. And it's called something like "They Fought Like Demons." And the author is a woman named Deanna, I think it's Balton, B-A-L-T-O-N, or Balto, or something like that. I'm sure you can find that, or I can, if you email me, or I can send you the title, and that's an interesting book. It turns out there's actually a lot of women who dressed as males, it's just not that well documented. And you said you found an African-American woman who did this and becomes a Buffalo Soldier, right?
Yeah.
So she might be in this book. I've never actually read the book, but I know of the book. And I think there's actually more than what people would think. It's just, it's very hard to document this. It said some of these women during their lifetime or while they're in the military wouldn't reveal who they were. And once the war was over, there was some question, people questioned whether what they said was true or not. That doesn't make it not true, but once again, it's hard to document. There's a fairly famous case of a Confederate woman, a Southern woman named Loretta Janetta Velazquez. And her name's Loretta, L-O-R-E-T-A, Janetta, J-A-N-E-T-A, Velazquez. It's V-E-L-A-Z-Q-E-Z. And she's a Confederate. And her husband was in the military, and she accompanied him. And I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but at some point the husband dies, and she continues to serve, and she serves under the name Harry T. Buford. And she writes basically like an autobiography of her service in the Confederate Army. I think she's at the Battle of Shiloh, I think.
Well.
And I think, and once again, I'm not real strong on this, I think some people believe that a lot of what she wrote was made up. Like, so people didn't believe her. But my understanding is within the last, maybe 10, 15 years, people have gone back and looked at her story, and a lot of the things she says you can actually verify with other sources. So maybe she actually did do this, and maybe a lot of her story is actually true, and people didn't think it was because they didn't think a woman could do this, but actually she could. So that she's kind of an interesting case.
Yeah. Cathay Williams, William Cathay, switched her name. She was the first African American woman to enlist, and I don't know if she was the only one. Probably not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, no. I'm pretty sure she was in Indiana, the 8th Indiana.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. The website I was at, I'm pretty sure said she was a Buffalo Soldier. Might have been.
See, that's what I'm saying, because that means she served beyond the Civil War, because they were out on the Great Plains. So that's very interesting. I'd never heard of her, or if I have, I don't remember her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was
assigned
to the 38th United States Infantry Regiment.
Okay, so that's
neat. Yeah.
And where did you find her, or you don't quite remember how you found her?
I have the website, but
right.
It's on my other laptop, and I have bookmark. I'll send you the link.
An interesting story. If there was a little article about her, that would be a good one to have students read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you have any suggestions for other sources or anyone else?
Well, the book I showed you by Carol Burkin, that might give you. And this wouldn't be too many people, but it would be. Some insights about people you don't normally think about, Jefferson Davis's wife and Grant's wife, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that book I mentioned, They Fought Like Demons.
Yeah.
Those would be, I saw the ones Dr. Kelleher recommended. Those are all very good. I think those would be the best ones right off the top of my head.
If I have any follow-up questions, is it alright if I just contact
you? Sure.
Uh-huh. And then I'm just going to send you an email with the link to the website.
Yeah, I would like to see that. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else.
Okay, yeah, I can't think of anything, but if something comes up or you come up with other questions, don't hesitate to ask.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you for your time.
Sure, my pleasure. This was kind of fun.
It was a lot.
Good.
I was really interested in the letters. I didn't know,
The letters?
Yeah, that the women.
Oh, the writing letters.